Sorry. I didn't think. I knew. How did I know? Someone told me. Madeline told me ages ago. But I remember it. She told me this whole story about how you broke up with your boyfriend and you took it really bad and you just spent hours crying and surfing. Tom grinned. Tom O'Brien, he said. That's who she was talking about. Tom O'Brien, the smash repair guy. Tom O'Brien was big and burly, with a black bushy beard. She had never even properly registered the fact that the two Toms had the same name. They were so different. It's perfectly understandable, said Tom. It would seem more likely that Tom the barista was gay than Tom the giant smash repairer. He's happy now, by the way, in love with someone new. Hmm, said Jane. She considered. His receipts did smell really nice. Tom snorted. I hope I didn't, offend you, said Jane. She hadn't fully closed the bathroom door when she'd gotten dressed. She'd left it partly ajar, the way she would have if Tom had been a girl, so that they could keep talking. She wasn't wearing any underwear. She had talked to him so freely. She'd always been so free with him. If she'd known he was straight, she would have kept a part of herself safe. She'd let herself feel attracted to him, because he was gay, so it didn't count. Of course not, said Tom. Their eyes met. His face, so dear and familiar to her now, after all these months, felt suddenly strange. He was blushing. They were both blushing. Her stomach dropped as if she were at the top of a roller coaster. Oh, calamity. I think that piece goes in the corner there, said Tom. Jane looked at the jigsaw piece and slotted it into place. She hoped the tremor in her fingers looked like clumsiness. You're right, she said. Carol. I saw Jane having a very, shall we say, intimate conversation with one of the fathers at the trivia night. Their faces were this close, and I'm pretty sure he had his hand on her knee. I was a little shocked, to be frank. Gabrielle. It wasn't a school dad. It was just Tom, the barista. And he's gay. Chapter 69. Half an hour before the trivia night. You look so beautiful, Mummy, said Josh. He stood at the bedroom door, staring at Celeste. She was wearing a sleeveless black dress, long white gloves, and the pearl necklace Perry had bought for her in Switzerland. Celeste had even put her hair up in a passable Audrey Hepburn-style beehive bun, and had just that moment found a vintage diamond comb. She looked pretty nice. Madeline would be pleased with her. Thank you, Joshie, said Celeste, more touched than she could remember ever being from a compliment. Give me a cuddle. He ran to her, and she sat on the end of the bed and let him snuggle into her. He'd never been as snuggly as Max, so when he needed a hug, she made sure to take her time. She pressed her lips to his hair. She'd taken more painkillers, even though she wasn't sure if she really needed them, and was feeling detached and floaty. Mummy, said Josh. I need to tell you a secret. What's that? She closed her eyes and hugged him closer.
I don't want to tell you, said Josh.
You don't have to tell me, said Celeste dreamily.
But it makes me feel sad, said Josh.
What makes you feel sad? Celeste lifted her head and made herself focus.
Okay, so Max isn't hurting Amabella anymore, said Josh. But then yesterday he pushed Skye down the stairs near the library again. And I said he shouldn't do that, and we had a big fight because I said I was going to tell.
Max pushed Skye. Skye, Bonnie and Nathan's anxious, waif-like little girl. Max had pushed Skye down the stairs again. The thought of her son hurting that fragile child made Celeste feel instantly sick. But why, she said, why would he do that? The back of her head had begun to ache.
Dunno, shrugged Josh. He just does.
Wait a moment, said Celeste. Her mobile phone was ringing somewhere downstairs. She pressed a fingertip to her forehead. Her head felt fuzzy. Did you say Max isn't hurting Amabella anymore? What are you talking about? What do you mean?
I'll answer it, called out Perry.
Josh was impatient with her.
No, no, Mummy, listen. He doesn't go near Amabella anymore. It's Skye. He's being mean to Skye. When no one is looking except me.
Mummy!
Max came running in. His face was ecstatic.
I think my tooth is wobbly.
He put his finger in his mouth. He looked so cute, so sweet and innocent. His face still had that baby roundness. He was desperate to lose a tooth because he was obsessed with the idea of the tooth fairy. When the boys turned 3, Josh asked for a digger and Max asked for a baby doll. She and Perry had enjoyed watching him cradle the doll, singing it soft little lullabies. And Celeste had loved the fact that Perry didn't mind at all that their son was behaving in such a non-masculine way. Of course, he'd soon dropped dolls for lightsabers, but he was still her cuddly son, the most loving of the boys. And now he was staking out the quiet little girls in the class and hurting them. Her son was a bully. How does the abuse affect your children? Susie had asked.
It doesn't, she'd said.
Oh, Max, she said.
Feel it, said Max. I'm not making it up. It's definitely loose.
He looked up at his father as Perry came into the room.
You look funny, Daddy.
Hey, Daddy, look at my tooth. Look, look.
Perry was barely recognizable in his perfectly fitted shiny black wig, gold aviator glasses, and, of course, the iconic white Elvis jumpsuit with glittering gemstones. He held Celeste's mobile phone in his hand.
Wow! It's really loose this time? He said. Let me see.
He put the phone down on the bed next to Celeste and Josh and got down on his knees in front of Max, pushing his glasses down over his nose so he could see.
I have a message for you, he said, glancing at Celeste.
He put his finger on Max's lower lip.
Let me see, buddy. From Mindy.
Mindy? Said Celeste vaguely. I don't know anyone called Mindy. She was thinking about Jane and Ziggy.
the petition that should have Max's name on it. She needed to tell the school. Should she call Miss Barnes right now? Should she call Jane? Your property manager, said Perry. Celeste's stomach plunged. She let Josh wriggle off her lap.
I bet your tooth isn't loose, he said to his brother.
Maybe a little loose, said Perry. He ruffled Max's hair and straightened his glasses. They're putting new smoke alarms in your apartment and want to know if they can get access Monday morning. Mindy wondered if 9 a.m. was okay with you. He grabbed both boys by their waists and lifted them up on his hips, where they clung comfortably like monkeys, their faces joyous. Perry smiled down at Celeste, a white-teethed Elvis smile. Does that suit you, honey? The doorbell rang. Chapter 70. The Trivia Night. Stew. As soon as you walked in the door, you were handed one of these girly-looking pink fizzy cocktails. Samantha. They were divine. Only problem was, the Year 6 teachers made some sort of miscalculation with quantities, so each drink was worth about 3 shots. These are the people teaching our kids math, by the way. Gabrielle. I was starving because I'd been saving all my calories for that night. I had half a cocktail and hoo-wee! Jackie. I go to a lot of corporate events with big drinking high flyers, but let me tell you, I've never seen a group of people get so drunk so fast as they did at this school trivia night. Thea. The caterer's car broke down, so everyone was hungry and drinking these very strong alcoholic drinks. I thought to myself, this is a recipe for disaster. Miss Barnes. It's not a good look for teachers to get drunk at school functions, so I always sit on one drink. But that cocktail, like, I'm not even sure exactly what I was saying to people. Mrs. Lipman. We are currently reviewing our procedures in relation to the serving of alcohol at school events.
Cocktail?
A blonde Audrey Hepburn held out a tray. Jane took the proffered pink drink and looked about the school assembly hall. All the blonde bobs must have had a meeting to ensure they all wore identical pearl chokers, little black dresses, and updos. Perhaps Mrs. Ponder's daughter had offered a group discount.
Are you new to the school? Asked the blonde bob. I don't think I know your face.
I'm a kindy mum, said Jane. I've been here since the beginning of the year. Gosh, this drink is good.
Yes, the Year 6 teachers invented it. They're calling it not on a school night or something.
The blonde bob did a double take.
Oh, I do know you. You've had a haircut. It's, Jane, isn't it?
Yep, that's me, the mother of the bully, except he's actually not. The blonde bob dropped her like a hot potato.
Have a great night, she said. There's a seating plan over that way.
She waved a dismissive hand in no particular direction. Jane wandered into the crowd, past groups of animated Elvises and giggling Audreys, all of them tossing back the pink cocktails. She looked around for Tom because she knew he'd enjoy joining her in analysing exactly what was in it to make it taste so good. Tom is straight. The thought kept disappearing and then popping up in her head like a jack-in-the-box. Boing! Tom is not gay. Boing! Tom is not gay. Boing! It was hilarious and wonderful and terrifying. She came face to face with Madeline, a vision in pink. Pink dress, pink bag, and pink drink in her hand. Jane! Madeline's hot pink silk cocktail dress was studded with green rhinestones and had a huge pink satin bow tied around her waist. Almost every other woman in the room was in black, but Madeline, of course, knew exactly how to stand out in a crowd. "You look gorgeous," said Jane. "Is that Chloe's tiara you're wearing?" Madeline touched the tiara with its pink plastic stones. Yes, I had to pay her an exorbitant rental fee for it. But you're the one who looks gorgeous. She took Jane's arm and spun her around in a slow circle. Your hair! You never told me you were getting it cut. It's perfect. Did Lucy Ponder do that for you? And the outfit, it's so cute. She turned Jane back around to face her and put a hand over her mouth. Jane, you're wearing red lipstick. I'm just so, so... Her voice trembled with emotion. I'm just so happy to see you wearing lipstick. How many of those pretty pink drinks have you had? Asked Jane. She had another long sip of her own. This is only my second, said Madeline. I have terrible, ghastly PMS. I may kill someone before the night is out. But all is good. All is great. Abigail closed her website down. Oh, wait. You don't even know about the website, do you? So much has happened. So many calamitous catastrophes. And wait. How was yesterday? The appointment with the you-know-who? What website did Abigail close down? Said Jane. She took another long draw on her straw and watched the pink liquid disappear. It was going straight to her head. She felt marvelously, gloriously happy. The appointment with the psychologist went well. She lowered her voice. Ziggy isn't the one who bullied Amabella. Of course he isn't, said Madeline. I think I finished this already, said Jane. Do you think they even have alcohol in them? Said Madeline. They taste like something fizzy and fun from childhood. They taste like a summer afternoon, like a first kiss, like a... Ziggy has nits, said Jane. So do Chloe and Fred, said Madeline gloomily. Oh, and I've got so much to tell you too. This morning, Harper's husband got old Tony Soprano on me. He said if I went near Harper again, he'd bring the full weight of the law down on me. He's a partner in a law firm, apparently. Graham, said Madeline. He does tax law, for heaven's sake. Tom threw them out of the coffee shop. Seriously? Madeline looked thrilled. With my bare hands. Jane spun around to see Tom standing in front of her, wearing jeans and a plaid button-down shirt. He was holding one of the ubiquitous pink drinks. Tom! Said Jane, as ecstatically as if he were a returned soldier. She took an involuntary step closer to him, and then stepped back fast when her arm brushed against his. "You both look beautiful," said Tom, but his eyes were on Jane. "You don't look anything like Elvis," said Madeline disapprovingly. "I don't do costumes," said Tom. He pulled self-consciously on his nicely ironed shirt. "Sorry." The shirt didn't really suit him. He looked far better in the black T-shirts he wore at the cafe.
The thought of Tom standing bare-chested in his little studio apartment, conscientiously ironing his unflattering shirt, filled Jane with tenderness and lust.
"Hey, can you taste mint in this?" said Tom to Jane.
"That's it," said Jane.
"So it's just strawberry puree, champagne, and I'm thinking vodka," said Tom.
He took another sip. "I'm thinking maybe quite a lot of vodka."
"Do you think?" said Jane.
Her eyes were on his lips. She'd always known Tom was good-looking, but she'd never analyzed why. It was possibly his lips. He had beautiful, almost feminine lips. This really was a very sad day for the gay community.
"Aha!" said Madeline.
"Aha!"
"What's that?" said Tom.
"G'day, Tom, mate."
Ed strolled up next to Madeline and put his arm around her waist. He was in a black and gold Elvis outfit with cape-like sleeves and a huge collar. It was impossible to look at him without laughing.
"How come Tom doesn't have to dress up like a dickhead?" he said.
He grinned at Jane.
"Stop laughing, Jane. You look smashing, by the way. Have you done something different to your hair?"
Madeline grinned idiotically at Jane and Tom, her head turning back and forth like she was at a tennis match.
"Look, darling," she said to Ed, "Tom and Jane."
"Yes," said Ed, "I see them. I just spoke to them, in fact."
"It's so obvious," said Madeline, all shiny-eyed, one hand to her heart. "I can't believe I never..."
To Jane's immense relief, she stopped, her eyes over their shoulders.
"Look who's here. The king and queen of the prom."
Chapter 71. Perry didn't speak as they drove the short distance to the school. They were still going. Celeste couldn't quite believe they were still going. But then again, of course they were going. They never cancelled. Sometimes she had to change what she'd planned to wear. Sometimes she had to have an excuse ready. But the show must go on. Perry had already posted a Facebook photo of them in their costumes. It would make them look like good-humoured, funny, fun people who didn't take themselves too seriously and cared about their school and their local community. It perfectly complemented other more glamorous posts about overseas trips and expensive cultural events. A school trivia night was just the thing for their brand. She looked straight ahead at the briskly working windshield wipers. The windshield was just like the never-ending cycles of her mind. Confusion, clear, confusion, clear, confusion, clear. She watched his hands on the steering wheel. Capable hands. Tender hands. Vicious hands. He was just a man in an Elvis costume driving her to a school event. He was a man who had just discovered that his wife was planning to leave him. A hurt man. A betrayed man. An angry man. But just a man. Confusion. Clear. Confusion. Clear. When Gwen had arrived to babysit the boys, Perry had turned on the charm as though something vital depended on it. She was cool with Perry at first, but it turned out that Elvis was Gwen's weak spot. She launched into a story about how she'd been one of the Golden Girls when Elvis's gold Cadillac toured Australia. Until Perry cut in smoothly, like a gentleman stealing a woman away at a dance. The rain eased as they drove into the school street. The street was jammed with cars,
but there was a space waiting for Perry near the school entrance, as if he'd pre-booked it. He always got a parking spot. Lights turned green for him. The dollar obediently went up or down for him. Perhaps that's why he got so angry when things didn't go right. He turned off the ignition. Neither of them moved or spoke. Celeste saw one of the kindergarten mothers hurrying past the car in a long dress that forced her to take little steps. She was carrying a child's polka-dotted umbrella. Gabrielle, thought Celeste, the one who talked endlessly about her weight. Celeste turned to look at Perry. Max has been bullying Amabella, Renata's little girl. Perry kept looking straight ahead.
How do you know?
Josh told me, said Celeste, just before we left. Ziggy has been taking the blame for it.
Ziggy, your cousin's child.
He's the one the parents are petitioning to have suspended. She closed her eyes briefly as she thought of Perry slamming her head against the wall. It should be a petition to have Max suspended, not Ziggy. Perry turned to look at her. He looked like a stranger with his black wig. The blackness made his eyes appear brilliant blue.
We'll talk to the teachers, he said.
I'll talk to his teacher, said Celeste. You won't be here, remember?
Right, said Perry. Well, I'll talk to Max tomorrow before I go to the airport.
What will you say? Said Celeste.
I don't know.
There was a huge, heavy block of pain lodged beneath her chest. Was this a heart attack? Was this fury? Was this a broken heart? Was this the weight of her responsibility? Will you tell him that's not the way to treat a woman? She said. And it was like jumping off a cliff. Never a word. Not like that. She'd broken an unbreakable rule. Was it because he looked like Elvis Presley and none of this was real? Or was it because he knew about the apartment now and everything was more real than ever before? Perry's face changed, cracked open.
The boys have never...
They have, cried Celeste. She'd pretended so very hard for so very long, and there was nobody here except the two of them. The night before their party last year, Max got out of bed. He was standing right there at the doorway.
Yes, okay, said Perry.
And there was that time in the kitchen when you... When I... He put his hand out. Okay. Okay. She stopped. After a moment, he said,
So you've leased an apartment?
Yes, said Celeste.
When are you leaving?
Next week, she said. I think next week.
With the boys?
This is when you should feel fear, she thought. This is not the way Susie said it should be done. Scenarios, plans, escape routes. She was not treading carefully, but she tried to tread carefully for years, and she knew it never made the slightest difference anyway. Of course, with the boys. He took a sharp intake of breath, as if he'd experienced a sudden pain.
He put his face in his hands and leaned forward so that his forehead was pressed to the top of the steering wheel and his whole body shook as if with convulsions. Celeste stared, and for a moment she couldn't work out what he was doing. Was he sick? Was he laughing? Her stomach tightened, and she put her hand on the car door, but then he lifted his head and turned to her. His face was streaked with tears. His Elvis wig was askew. He looked unhinged.
"I'll get help," he said. I promise you, I'll get help."
"You won't," she said quietly. The rain was softening. She could see other Audreys and Elvises hurrying along the street, huddled under umbrellas, and hear their shouts and laughter.
"I will." His eyes brightened. "Last year, I got a referral from Dr. Hunter to see a psychiatrist."
There was a note of triumph in his voice as he remembered this. "You told Dr. Hunter about us?" Their family GP was a kindly, courtly grandfather.
"I told him I thought I was suffering from anxiety," said Perry.
He saw the expression on her face.
"Well, Dr. Hunter knows us," he said defensively. "But I was going to see a psychiatrist. I was going to tell him. I just never got around to it, and then I just kept thinking I could fix it myself."
She couldn't think less of him for this. She knew the way your mind could go round and round in endless, pointless circles.
I think the referral is out of date now, but I'll get another one. I just get so... When I get angry, I don't know what happens to me. It's like a madness, like this unstoppable... And I never actually make the decision to... It just happens, and every time I can't believe it, and I think I will never, ever let that happen again. And then yesterday... Celeste, I feel sick about yesterday.
The car windows were fogging up. Celeste ran her palm over her side window, making a porthole to see out. Perry was speaking as if he genuinely believed this was the first time he'd said this sort of thing, as if it were brand new information. "We can't bring the boys up like this." She looked out at the rainy, dark street, which was filled with shouting, laughing, blue-hatted children each school morning. She realized with a tiny shock that if it weren't for Josh's revelation tonight about Max's behavior, she probably still wouldn't have left. She would have convinced herself that she'd been overdramatic, that yesterday hadn't been that bad, that any man would have been angry if they'd been humiliated the way she'd humiliated Perry in front of Madeline and Ed. The boys had always been her reason to stay, but now, for the first time, they were her reason to leave. She'd allowed violence to become a normal part of their life. Over the last 5 years, Celeste herself had developed a kind of imperviousness and acceptance of violence that allowed her to hit back and sometimes even hit first. She scratched, she kicked, she slapped, as if it were normal. She hated it, but she did it. If she stayed, that was the legacy she was giving her boys. She turned away from the window and looked at Perry. "It's over," she said. "You must know it's over." He flinched. She saw him prepare to fight, to strategize, to win. He never lost.
"I'll cancel this next trip," he said. "I'll resign.
I'll do nothing for the next 6 months but work on us. Not on us. On me. For the next... Jesus fucking Christ!
He jumped back, his eyes on something past Celeste's shoulder. She turned and gasped. There was a face pressed gargoyle-like against the window. Perry pressed a button, and Celeste's window slid down. It was Renata, smiling brightly as she leaned down into the car, a gauzy wrap about her shoulders, clutched in one hand. Her husband stood next to her, sheltering her from the rain with a huge black umbrella.
"Sorry, didn't mean to startle you. Do you need to share our umbrella? You two look fabulous."
Chapter 72. It was like watching movie stars arrive, thought Madeline. There was something about the way Perry and Celeste held themselves, as if they were walking onto a stage. Their posture was too good. Their smiles were camera ready. They were wearing similar outfits to many of the guests, but it was like Perry and Celeste weren't in costume. It was as though the real Elvis and Audrey had arrived. Every woman wearing a black Breakfast at Tiffany's dress touched a hand to her inferior pearl necklace. Every man in a white Elvis suit sucked in his stomach. The levels of pink fizzy drinks went down, down, down. "Wow, Celeste looks so beautiful." Madeline turned to see Bonnie standing next to her. Like Tom, Bonnie obviously didn't do costumes. Her hair was in its normal single plait over one shoulder. No makeup. She looked like a homeless person on a special night out. Long-sleeved top of some faded, thin fabric falling off one shoulder. All her clothes fell off one shoulder in that irritating way. Madeline longed to grab her and straighten everything up. Long, shapeless skirt. Old leather belt around her waist. Lots of that weird skull and bones, crazy gypsy lady jewelry. If you could call it jewelry. If Abigail were here, she would look at her mother and her stepmother, and it would be Bonnie whose outfit she would admire. It would be Bonnie she chose to emulate. And that was fine, because no teenager wanted to look like her mother. Madeline knew that. But why couldn't Abigail admire some random drug-addicted celebrity? Why did it have to be bloody Bonnie? "How are you, Bonnie?" she said. She watched Tom and Jane melt away into the crowd. Someone was asking Tom for a soy latte, to much hilarity. Poor Tom. But Tom didn't seem bothered. His eyes kept returning to Jane, as Jane's did to him. Watching their obvious mutual attraction had made Madeline feel as if she were witnessing some beautiful, extraordinary, but everyday event, like the hatching of a newborn chick. But now she was making conversation with her ex-husband's wife, and although the alcohol was numbing her nicely, she could feel the subterranean rumbling of her PMS. "Who's looking after Skye?" she said to Bonnie. "I'm sorry." She tapped her forehead. "We should have offered to have Skye over to our place. Abigail is looking after Chloe and Fred for us. She could have babysat all her siblings at once." Bonnie smiled warily. "Skye is with my mother." "Abigail could have given them all a tutorial on website design," said Madeline at the same time. Bonnie's smile disappeared. "Madeline, listen, about that..." "Oh, Skye is with your mother," continued Madeline. "Lovely. Abigail has a special connection with your mother, doesn't she?" She was being a bitch. She was a terrible, awful person. She needed to find someone who would let her say all sorts of horrible, bitchy things and not judge her for it, or pass them on. Where was Celeste?
Celeste was great for that. She watched Bonnie drain her glass. A blonde Bob came by, carrying a tray of more pink drinks. Madeline took two more drinks for herself and Bonnie.
"When are we starting the trivia competition?" she said to the blonde Bob. "We're all getting too drunk to concentrate."
The blonde Bob looked predictably harried.
"I know, we're way off schedule. We're meant to have finished the canapés by now, but the caterer is stuck in a huge traffic jam on Pirouette Road."
She blew a lock of blonde hair out of her eyes.
"And Brett Larson is the MC, and he's stuck in the same traffic jam."
"Ed will be MC," said Madeline blithely. "He's a great MC."
She looked about for Ed and saw him approaching Renata's husband, all smiles and backslaps.
"Great choice, darling. Are you aware your wife ran into his wife's car yesterday afternoon, resulting in a public screaming match?"
Ed probably thought he was talking to Gareth, the golfer, not Jeff, the bird watcher, and was currently asking Jeff if he'd been on the course much lately.
Thanks, anyway. But Brett has all the trivia questions. He's been working on them for months. He's got this whole multimedia presentation planned," said the blonde Bob.
"Just bear with us."
She moved off with her tray of drinks.
"These cocktails are going straight to my head," said Bonnie.
Madeline was only half listening. She was watching Renata nod coolly at Ed and turn quickly to talk to someone else. She remembered suddenly the hot gossip she'd heard yesterday about Renata's husband being in love with the French nanny. That news had gone straight out of her head when she'd found out about Abigail's website. Now she felt bad for yelling back when Renata yelled at her for running into her car. Bonnie swayed a little.
"I don't drink much these days, so I guess I have a very low tolerance."
"Excuse me, Bonnie," said Madeline. "I need to go collect my husband. He seems to be in a very animated conversation with an adulterer. I don't want him picking up any ideas."
Bonnie swung her head to see who was talking to Ed.
"Don't worry," said Madeline. "Your husband isn't the adulterer. Nathan is always monogamous right up until he deserts you with a newborn baby." "Oh, but wait. He didn't desert you with a newborn baby. That was just me."
Bugger niceness. It was overrated. The Madeline of tomorrow was going to regret every word she said tonight, but the Madeline of right now was exhilarated by the removal of all those pesky inhibitions. How wonderful to let the words just come slip-sliding out of her mouth.
"Where is my delightful ex-husband, anyway?" said Madeline. "I haven't seen him yet tonight. I can't tell you how great it is to know that I can go to the school trivia night and know that I'll run into Nathan."
Bonnie fiddled with the end of her plait and looked at Madeline with slightly unfocused eyes. "Nathan left you 15 years ago," she said. There was something in her voice that Madeline had never heard before. A roughness, as though something had been rubbed off. "How interesting. Yes, please do show me another side of yourself, Bonnie."
"He did a terrible, terrible thing. He will never forgive himself for it," said Bonnie. "But it might be time you thought about forgiving him, Madeline. The health benefits of forgiveness are really quite extraordinary."
Madeline inwardly rolled her eyes. Maybe she outwardly did as well. She'd thought for a minute that she was about to see the real Bonnie, but she was just speaking her normal airy-fairy, no-substance rubbish. Bonnie looked at her earnestly.
"I've had personal experience.
There were sudden squeals of delight from a group of people behind Bonnie. Someone cried, "I'm so happy for you." A woman stepped back, causing Bonnie to lurch forward so that her cocktail spilled right down Madeline's pink dress. Gabrielle. It was an accident. Davina was hugging Rowena. She'd just made some sort of announcement. I think she'd reached her goal weight. Jackie. Rowena had just announced she'd bought a Thermomix. Or a Vitamix. I wouldn't know. I have an actual life. So, of course, Davina hugged her. Because she'd bought a new kitchen appliance? I'm not making this stuff up. Melissa. No, no, we were talking about the latest knit outbreak, and Rowena asked Davina if she'd checked her own hair, and then someone's husband pretended he could see something crawling through Davina's hair. The poor girl went crazy and collided with Bonnie.
Harper.
What? No. Bonnie threw her drink at Madeline. I saw it. Chapter 73. The trivia night had been going for over an hour now, without food or trivia. Jane had a sense of gentle, undulating movement, as though she were on a ship. The room was becoming warmer. It had been cold earlier, and the heat was on too high. Faces were turning pink. The rain picked up again and pounded on the roof, so people had to raise their voices to be heard over the roar. The room rippled with laughter. A rumor circulated that someone had ordered in pizza. Women began to pull emergency snacks from handbags. Jane watched as a large Elvis offered to donate $500 to the school in return for Samantha's salt and vinegar chips. "Sure," said Samantha, but her husband, Stu, swept the chips out of her hand before the deal could be struck. "Sorry, mate. I need these more than the kids need smart boards." Ed said to Madeline, "Why don't you have snacks in your bag? What sort of woman are you?"
"This is a clutch."
Madeline brandished her tiny sequined bag. "Stop that, Bonnie. I'm fine." She swatted at Bonnie, who was following her about, dabbing at her dress with a handful of paper towels. Two Audreys and an Elvis argued loudly and passionately about standardized testing. "There is no evidence to suggest. They teach to the test. I know for a fact they teach to the test." Blonde bobs ran this way and that with mobile phones pressed to their ears. "The caterer is just 5 minutes away," scolded one when she saw Stu eating his salt and vinegar chips.
"Sorry," said Stu. He held out the pack. "Want one?"
"Oh, all right." She took a chip and hurried off.
"Couldn't organize a root in a brothel."
Stu shook his head sadly.
"Shh," hissed Samantha.
"Are school trivia nights always this..." Tom couldn't seem to find the right word.
"I don't know," said Jane.
Tom smiled at her. She smiled at him. They seemed to be smiling at each other quite a lot tonight, as if they were both in on the same private joke. "Dear God, please don't let me be imagining this."
"Tom, where's my large skim cap, please?"
Tom widened his eyes fractionally at Jane as he was swept off into another conversation.
"Jane, I've been looking out for you. How are you?"
Miss Barnes appeared, totteringly taller than usual, in very high heels. She was wearing a giant hat, a pink boa, and carrying a parasol. She didn't look anything like Audrey Hepburn, as far as Jane could see. She was enunciating her words very slowly and carefully, to make sure nobody knew she was tipsy.
"How are you holding up?" she said, as though Jane were recently bereaved, and for a moment Jane struggled to recall her recent bereavement.
Oh, the petition, of course. The whole school thought her child was a bully. That. Whatever.
Tom isn't gay.
We're meeting before school on Monday morning, right? Said Miss Barnes. I assume it's about the issue. She put air quotes around the word issue.
Yes, said Jane. Something I need to tell you. I won't talk about it now.
She kept seeing Celeste in the distance with her husband, but she hadn't even gotten to say hello yet.
I'm dressed as Audrey Hepburn in My Fair Lady, by the way, said Miss Barnes resentfully. She gestured at her outfit. She made other movies besides Breakfast at Tiffany's, you know.
I knew exactly who you were, said Jane.
Anyway, this bullying thing has gotten out of control, said Miss Barnes.
She stopped enunciating and let her words flow in a slurred, sloppy rush.
Every day I'm getting emails from parents concerned about bullying. I think there's a roster. It's constant. We need to be sure our children are in a safe environment. And then some of them do this passive-aggressive thing. I know you're under-resourced, Miss Barnes, so do you need more parent helpers? I am available to come in on Wednesday afternoon at 1 p.m. And then if I don't answer straight away, Miss Barnes, I have not yet heard back from you regarding my offer, and of course I fucking CC Mrs. Lipman on everything.
Miss Barnes sucked on the straw of her empty glass.
Sorry for swearing. Kindergarten teachers shouldn't swear. I never swear in front of the children, just in case you're thinking of making an official complaint.
You're off duty, said Jane. You can say what you want. She took a small step back because Miss Barnes' hat kept banging against Jane's head as she talked.
Where was Tom?
There he was, surrounded by a cluster of adoring Audreys.
Off duty? I'm never off duty. Last year my ex-boyfriend and I went to Hawaii and we walked into the foyer of the hotel and I hear this cute little voice saying, Miss Barnes, Miss Barnes, and my heart sank like a stone. It was the kid who had just given me the most grief over the whole last term, and he was staying at the same hotel, and I had to pretend to be happy to see him and play with him in the fucking pool. The parents lay on their deck chairs, smiling benevolently, as if they were doing me a wonderful favor. My boyfriend and I broke up on the holiday, and I blame that kid.
Do not tell anyone I said that. Those parents are here tonight.
Oh, God, promise me you'll never tell anyone I said that.
I promise, said Jane, on my life.
Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yes, the emails, but that's not all. They keep turning up, said Miss Barnes. The parents, at any time.
Renata has taken leave of absence from work so she can do random checks on Amabella, even though we've got the teacher's aide who does nothing but observe Amabella. I mean, fair enough, I never saw what was going on, and I feel bad about that. But it's not just Renata. I'll be in the middle of doing some activity with the kids, and suddenly I'll look up, and there's a parent at the door just watching me. It's creepy. It's like I'm being stalked.
It sounds like harassment to me, said Jane.
Oops. Just watch. There you go. She gently pushed Miss Barnes's hat out of her face.
Do you want another drink?
You look like you could use another drink.
I'm at Pirawee Drugstore on the weekend, said Miss Barnes, because I've got a terrible urinary tract infection. I'm seeing someone new anyway, sorry, too much information. And I'm standing at the counter waiting, and all of a sudden, Thea Cunningham is standing at my side, and honestly, I didn't even hear her say hello before she launches into this story of how Violet was so upset after school the other day because Chloe told her that her hair clips didn't match.
Well,
They didn't match. I mean, for God's sake, that's not bullying. That's kids being kids. But oh no, Violet was so wounded by this, and could I please talk to the whole class about speaking nicely to one another, and... I'm sorry. I just saw Mrs. Lippman giving me a death stare. Excuse me. I think I'll just go splash cold water on my face. Miss Barnes turned so fast, her pink boa swung against Jane's face. Jane turned around and came face to face with Tom again.
"Hold out your hand," he said.
"Quickly."
She held out her hand and he gave her a handful of pretzels.
"That big, scary-looking Elvis over there found a bag of them in the kitchen," said Tom. He reached to the side of her face and removed something pink from her hair.
"Feather," he said.
"Thanks," said Jane. She ate a pretzel.
"Jane."
She felt a cool hand on her arm. It was Celeste.
"Hello, you," said Jane happily.
Celeste looked so beautiful tonight. It was a pleasure simply to lay eyes on her. Why was Jane always so weird about beautiful people? They couldn't help their beauty, and they were so lovely to look at. And Tom had just brought her pretzels and blushed a little when he took the feather out of her hair. And he wasn't gay, and these fizzy pink cocktails were glorious. And she loved school trivia nights. They were just so funny and fun.
"Can I talk to you for a minute?"
said Celeste. Chapter 74.
"Shall we go out onto the balcony?" said Celeste to Jane. "Get some air?"
"Sure," said Jane. Jane seemed so young and carefree tonight, thought Celeste, like a teenager. The hall felt claustrophobic and overheated. Beads of sweat rolled down Celeste's back. One of her shoes was viciously rubbing away the skin at the back of her heel, leaving a nasty, bloody little blister, like she imagined a bedsore to be. This night would never end. She'd be here forever, assaulted by malicious snatches of conversation.
"So, I said, that's unacceptable."
"Completely incompetent. They have a duty of care.
They're spoiled brats. They eat nothing but junk food, so..."
"I said, if you can't control your child, then..."
Celeste had left Perry talking to Ed about golf. Perry was being charming, seducing everyone with that sudden white flash of a smile. But he was drinking much more than he normally did, and she could see his mood changing direction almost imperceptibly, like the slow turn of an ocean liner. She could see it in the hardening of his jaw and the glazing of his eyes. By the time they left for home, the distraught, sobbing man in the car would have vanished. She knew exactly how his thoughts would be twisting and turning, like the roots of an ancient tree. Normally, after a bad argument, like yesterday, she would be safe for weeks on end. But the discovery of her apartment was a betrayal of Perry. It was disrespectful. It was humiliating. She'd kept a secret from him. By the end of the night, nothing else would matter except her deception. It would be as if it were only that, as if they were a perfectly happily married couple and the wife had done something mystifying and bizarre. She'd set up a secret, elaborate plan to leave him. It was mystifying and bizarre. She deserved whatever was going to happen. There was no one else out on the huge balcony running the length of the hall. It was still raining, and although it was under cover, the wind was blowing in a fine mist, making the tiles wet and slippery. "Maybe this isn't so nice," said Celeste.
No, it's good, said Jane. It was getting so noisy in there. Cheers.
She clinked glasses with Celeste, and they both drank.
These cocktails are crazy good, said Jane.
They're ridiculous.